This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
And welcome back. It is, what is it? It's August 15th and you're tuned to Community Radio 3CR with Jacob and I on a Friday Rave.
Good afternoon, everybody.
And we're back again. So yeah, you are tuned to 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM. Or you might be listening via 3CR Digital. You're listening back by your favourite podcast client. Or from your copper chopper in the sky.
Well, I said it last week. I'll say it again this week. There's not a lot of copper choppers up here in western, northwestern New South Wales, where I'm camped by the River Guider. And what are we going to talk about today, mate?
Well, the last couple of weeks that we've talked about uranium mining in the Congo, and then last week, you know, of course, being the commemoration of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we spoke about all the companies and some of the people involved in building the bombs and the Manhattan Project. But we haven't really covered what's happening in defense and military procurement for a while.
And it's going on at an alarming rate. And we just had, I mean, it was not remiss of us, but it was just so much to talk about. We just had Talisman Sabre taken place. I think it's still taken place, isn't it?
The weapons are still floating around anyway.
Yeah, the weapons are still floating around. It's It started in the middle of last month. Oh, no, it finished last week, apparently.
Right. Okay.
But they're still demobbing.
Yeah. What's some of the major things to come out of Talisman Sabre? Now the HIMARS.
We had our first weapons HIMARS weapons firing, mm-hmm. which was apparently a raging success. We blew shit up. We blew up an old frigate, I think it was, off the northwest coast. Mm-hmm. But one of the big things that's come out of it, I mean, for the first time, it was the largest one ever. 19 different countries were involved.
And what, like 35,000 personnel or something?
35,000 personnel. And that, again, the personnel, it's always hard to put a figure on this because of, you know, we've said it before on this show, in the old days, and, you know, people who mainly know about military and what the military do through watching war movies, which, let's face it, unless you've been in the military, as most of us, you think of the military doing everything. But as well as nowadays when we're talking about military personnel, we're not talking about the cooks and the people who set the camp up and the people who deliver the fuel and all the people. That's all private contractors.
Mm.
So we're talking about 35,000 troops that are actually troops. You know, only 25 years ago, a good percentage of those troops would have been involved in preparing the food, cleaning the shit houses, you know, providing Quonset huts and beds and camping equipment and all that. That was all done in-house. Now, all that has been privatized and sent to companies. So that while the troop numbers might in some ways stay the same, they've actually increased because they're just troops. They're not logistic support or logistic services by and large.
Well, and this is, you know, Defence and the ADF in particular have been saying that recruitment numbers have been down, but I've got to check actually, but I guess how they sort of boost those numbers in terms of recruitment is just outsourcing things that were previously done in-house, or how they make it seem like numbers have boost.
Yeah.
A false posture, you might say.
Yeah, false posture.
False posture.
Yeah, but the numbers are down, but even recruiting is sent off to private recruitment firms.
Mm.
And no one wants to join I mean, what sane human being, and I know there are plenty of insane ones around, but what sane human being, looking at the world today, looking at the news of a possible conflagration with China, which isn't going to happen, but which is what they're pushing, looking at the images coming out of Ukraine and Palestine, which young person is going to say, "Oh, there's a good career. I might join the military." You have to be fucking crazy.
Well, but I mean, it's kind of this push towards private, like this privatization in the military industrial complex, which we know has been happening for a long time and is also just expanding at a rate. You know, a little while ago on the show, we talked about Ukraine's Brave One system, which was basically, you know, Amazon. And now that's also been sort of not floated as an idea, but it's being discussed about what that looks like in terms of putting regiments and parts of the military in direct contract and direct contact for ordering armaments and munitions and all of that kind of thing, rather than doing it through, say, the Department of Defense, but putting them in direct contact with the developers of those weapons and get them to deliver there, which is what the Brave One system does. But there is definitely a push amongst private investors, and it's been floated amongst, you know, the venture capital firms about what this would mean in terms of advancement, in terms of research and development, and how quick, much quicker, and also obviously financial returns for people who invest in those companies. Of course, they're pushing for this because it's a profit-driven enterprise.
Of course, and this is the same. Let's forget we're talking about the military and the bottom line being to kill and maim and injure and dislocate as many people as possible in order to extract their resources, because that's what militarism's about. But just thinking about privatization, the arguments they used about privatizing power, about privatizing the banks, about privatizing public transport, about privatizing universities. The argument was always that private industry would run things more efficiently than the government could. And that has been shown time and time again to be absolute bullshit. We got a situation where, basically the bushfires we had some years ago in Victoria were caused because the private companies didn't keep the maintenance up on the lines. Public transport is running later and later and later. There are more and more cancellations and delays and breakdowns because private industry is it's when we started just talking about private transport for a month, public transport for a minute, when we started public transport, it was never meant to turn a profit. Public transport was put in place by the various governments of this country and others to ensure that people can get to work and get to school and maintain productivity in other areas. It was never meant to make a profit. Now it's all about making a profit.
Oh, and just like
And of
housing as
course,
well.
housing as well. And in some ways you could say in public transport, what's the worst that could happen? Trains are late, buses don't run, all that kind of stuff. We're talking about the military. Now, even this is not exactly my view, but to work within their own parameters, they're saying the military is about the safety and the defense of our country. So, if nothing else, you look at the lessons we've learned from the privatization of industry and say, well, Jesus, mate, if there's one industry we can't afford to have this kind of a fuck up on, it's the military. But that's
I just want to touch.
precisely what they're doing here.
Yeah, and I just want to touch on the housing thing. I mean, the demolition of the housing towers, which has been happening down here, and has been, you know, works have started on the demolition of the public housing towers while people are still living there and they've got nowhere to go. And it's the privatization, profit-driven privatization. It's the way
Exactly.
that this works everywhere. But also, on the flip side, there's, it was a little while ago that ASIO released a report specifically around defence and defence contracting for businesses involved in defence manufacturing for foreign interference and how to and so a few weeks ago there was a, I think it was $170 million in grants were provided to a bunch of small to medium enterprises for a range of things, but a big part of that was included in security and upgrades to security to meet security requirements to defense. Now, we know that the Office of Defense Industry Support has given warning about protests and things like that, but also that ASIO are talking directly to defense contractors about possible interference.
Yeah, but it's not actually foreign interference in national security they're worried about. Because when you look at some of the grants that came in under these security grants last month, or maybe it was a month before, I can't recall. Some of them were for putting bigger fences up for closed circuit TV. That's not aimed at foreign interference. That's aimed at people like you, my friend.
Me, little old
You
me.
who go outside. Go out, you. Go outside of armed companies and accuse them of being complicit in genocide.
Yeah, well, I mean, one arms company that we've been at, HTA, was one of those ones to get, they got about 44 grand to upgrade their security in Victoria, their Campbellfield site, not long after their CEO, Norm Tucker, came out and said, oh, no, we make wheelchairs in Campbellfield. We don't do defence manufacturing there. Then are they either defrauding the government for upgrading their security, or they're flat out lying? Either way.
And then you've got Rosebank out in Bayswater, where the Christians had a little action a couple of months or a month ago. And they've just received more money for extra physical security barriers. Now, that's aimed at Christians praying at the fucking gates, mate.
And I mean, also, that kind of goes without saying that this week, it has been released that many of you listening would have heard about the Royal Australian Air Force planes that delivered some parts to from Sydney to Tel Aviv, which Penny Wong said, oh, they're non-lethal in nature. And so this week it has come out that there are currently 35 active export permits to Israel that had started prior to October 7, but have been deemed to, what was the word? No further action required or no action required. 34
They're
of those
still enforced.
35, they're still in force. 34 of those 35 export permits are for items that are on part one in the munitions list of the Defence and Strategic Good list. So they have no other purpose except for those of military purposes.
And still, we have the ABC. They talked to some bloke, I forget his name, some former US State Department Mandarin who was responsible for issuing weapons, sending weapons to other countries, who a couple of years ago or 18 months ago resigned from his job because he couldn't look at himself in the mirror anymore, basically. And they were talking to him on the ABC the other day. I think it's a program called Global Roaming with Geraldine Doogue and Hamish McDonald. And even then, Geraldine Doogue was saying, oh, yes, dual use, non-lethal, non-lethal. Like, we're talking about parts, monopoly parts for the F-35 fighter program,
And
like the
what was
bomb bay doors.
which are made Rosebank, and which the metals for
Yeah.
which are processed by HTA.
HTA. It's.
And what was, I think what was really important in that is, like, thinking about the F-35. I mean, Australia is one of three of the maintenance, repair and overhaul centres globally. There's one in the
And
US and one
part
in the
supply.
Netherlands, and parts
And
supply
part supply. Yeah.
up at Williamtown near Newcastle. And so
Yeah.
what was mentioned in that is the F-35, for every hour of flight, this is for every F-35, it requires about 4 to 5 hours of maintenance. So that includes parts. So in these standalone parts, which, yeah, fuck, we have said it again, that when they say they're non-lethal in nature, it's like it's a anything in and of itself can potentially be non-lethal in its nature, but it's a part of this weapon system that is required for it to run. So if
That's
Australia.
right. But no, I was just going to say, in a previous life, I was using a couple of old shells as paperweights in my office. Right now, as I'm talking to you, I'm using my coffee pot as a phone holder. I mean, does that make it dual use?
Dual use? Well, according to the government, it does.
Well, it's absolutely crazy. But now we're running out of time.
Well, there was one thing that I did just want to touch on, just very briefly about that, is that we have seen a massive shift, in the mainstream narrative and a lot more emphasis and focus on defence exports and what this actually means. And dual use has now become much more into the vernacular of how we talk about, weapons exports and military and defence manufacturing. And I think it needs to be noted that, Albert Systems of Australia, everything that Albert Systems of Australia manufactures is considered dual use. Every product has a dual use lens over it. And so, of course, that there are things that are on the part ones and are just specifically for defense. That's like night vision goggles and the visors that have been sent, the transponders that have been sent to Israel. But I also just want to talk about, we're talking about exports, but let's not forget imports of what
Exactly.
technologies of genocide the Australian government are importing, either directly from Israel itself or also through their front Australian Israeli companies as fr having their Australian-based front companies. Like, as an example, what just last week, Rafael Defence Systems, Australian subsidiary,
Right.
received just under $500,000 in a Department of Defense contract for guided missiles. Sorry, that was on the 1st of August, and it was just published yesterday.
Right, okay.
So they're
For
getting between August and December this year, Rafael Systems of Australia, which is Rafael Defense System, is third largest defense manufacturer, are
Yep.
getting just under $500,000 for guided missiles.
Right, okay. And they've gone, and we should point out to the listener too that Rafael, of just before they got that deal, went into partnership with General Atomic Systems to support the Australian Guided Weapons Explosive Ordnance, GWO, enterprise.
Enterprise, and they have a partnership with Varley, which of course to make the Spike L2 missiles for the Boxer reconnaissance
Yeah.
vehicles alongside, which is the same missile that killed Naomi Francom.
Exactly. That could have been made in Australia.
Could have been made in Australia, and of
We
course it
don't
would be,
know.
and it would be remiss of us to mention that, of course, this week, Israel conducted an airstrike that killed five Al Jazeera journalists alongside the ongoing murders of Palestinians seeking aid. But of course, the intelligence for that targeting information, where would it have come through?
Time gap. Had to have. But it's, and we shouldn't play down. We shouldn't sort of play down that they're the same missiles that kill people. Like in the press release Rafael put out with about their partnership with what are they called? General Atomics. Listen to this quote. Rafael Defence Australia stands ready to support the ADF as it delivers the GWEO enterprise. Managing Director of Rafael, Golan Ben Jiat, stated, quote, "This joint venture shows how key strategic allies like the US are already benefiting from Rafael's battle-proven missile expertise." They're using the fact that they've tested these missiles on the people of Gaza in a genocide as a selling point to the Australian government, and the Australian government gives them a contract. This is a direct connection between the CEO of Rafael Defence Australia saying their battle-proven missile expertise
And the Australian
that the
government have lapped it
Australian
up.
government is purchasing. This is ridiculous. And then, and we're talking here, I mean, you want to talk a little bit about the 155 mil what's it call it, 155 millimeter shells as well.
Yeah, the M795 artillery shells, which the US has sent hundreds of thousands of these to the Ukraine, and or tens of thousands rather to the Ukraine and to Israel, of course. There was the last one that they sent 52, just over 52,000 of this particular shell, the 155 millimeter that are have been raining down on Gaza for the last 22 months, 21 months.
And all over Ukraine and Western Russia.
Let alone anywhere else they're being used where there's mobile propelled howitzers.
And that's now led to a shortage of 155 millimeter shells globally.
Yeah, so I think it was back in 2023, as part of the Guided Weapons and Explosive Ordnance, the Australian government really announced a contract with Thales to produce this particular 155 millimeter shell in Benalla. But by 2028, there will be 15 the capacity to manufacture 15,000 of these shells with the capacity to make 100,000 for export. And so, of course, a lot of the shells, these 155 millimeter shells that have been sent to Israel and the Ukraine by the US, have come from the US stocks, as you said. So they need to re-up their stocks. And the US have also really gone hard on increasing manufacturing capability. But it was back in June that Pat Conroy announced that the Department of Defense is reassessing the manufacturing approach to 155 millimeter projectiles. Now, this is a it's a really weird release in terms of it's still saying that the defense remains committed to deliver those 155 millimeter M795 capability by 2028, still producing 15,000 rounds a year, with a further additional capacity, but that additional capacity will be determined as a quote as will be determined as part of the reapproach to the market. So it's kind of just saying, all right, we're just going to like pull back a little bit, or we're just going to put it on hold. It's not really saying anything. It's just like we're still committed to this project, but we're just going to put it on hold to see what happens first, and to increase the capability to produce naval 5-inch artillery.
It's absolutely crazy. We're running out of time, and so I just wanted to. I mean, that press release wasn't aimed at peace activists. It was aimed at industry, it's saying to industry, listen, we're going to have to pull back for a sec because we've been told by the United States we don't need the 155 mil so much now because, you know, Kongsberg, we're going to make the 155 mils. We set them up $800 million in a factory in Queensland. And then they immediately set up another bigger factory in the United States, in Texas, I think it is. And now we've gone off the notion of the 155 mil shells and starting retooling for the 5-inch shell. And now the 155 mil shells are in short supply again. So basically, the Australian government doesn't know what it's doing. It
Because
has
Nioa also,
absolutely
sorry,
no
go.
idea.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
it's no one.
Nioa also have the capability to produce 155 millimeter shells as well, a lot of which they export to Germany.
Yeah, Nioa make everything.
Yeah.
And they're needed here, and that's and they're needed here because there's a worldwide shortage. They are lobbing more shells around Ukraine, Western Russia, and Gaza than they can make. We're blowing shit up faster than we can make the shit to blow them up with. And this has led, I mean, apart from anything else, it's led to a gunpowder shortage in the United States. Now, that's a wonderful thing. That's almost a bloody South Park episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
The United States is running out of gunpowder. Damn fine thing, if you ask me. But you know, people are up in arms. And then we talk about, and then we've
So
got,
to speak.
yeah, so to speak. And then we've got the not just the projectiles, but the rockets. And the rockets are they're running out of rockets too. The SN The SM2s, the SM3s. I'm reading a thing here that says historic levels of air defense missiles are expended by US Navy ships in defense of Israel in protection of the Red Sea shipping route. All right. Now that's left the United States short of missiles. And these missiles, when we're talking about missiles, we're actually talking about, let me just bring up the costs here. One missile, the SM-3s, cost between 12.5 and $28 million US dollars each. And the smaller standard ones, the smallest ones, cost $2.5 million each. And they're lobbing these. They're absolutely lobbing these at drones launched by Houthi rebels on the banks of the Red Sea. This is ridiculous. Each interception requires at least two missiles. All right, so stopping these things is going to cost more than an F-35, according to this report. And then we've got, the submarines. The US is making 1.2, I think it is, submarines a year, and they need to make 2.1 to meet their own needs. And they just haven't got the industrial base. The UK is so far behind in its submarine work, its submarine manufacture. They've currently got 20 nuclear-powered submarines sitting in the docks around the UK waiting to be decommissioned because they've got nothing to do. They've got no way to dispose of the waste until last week.
Until last week, and what happened last week?
Well, Richard Marles signed what he calls the Geelong Treaty in honour of his hometown that agrees, amongst other things, to take UK nuclear waste from submarines.
There we go. And so with the Naval Nuclear Propulsion Bill that came out last year, that sort of said floated the idea that Australia might take nuclear waste, but nothing was really solidified or set in stone. Is that this treaty, this Geelong Treaty, signed in was it at
Geelong.
in Geelong?
Yeah, it was signed at Richard Marles' office in Geelong.
Signed at Richard Marles' office is now solidified, saying that Australia will take the UK's naval nuclear
Yeah.
waste.
And the Nuclear Navy Bill said that there was nothing in this bill which said we were taking waste from foreign powers, foreign nuclear waste, but there was nothing in the bill that said we wouldn't. And now this one says we will. So it's just putting things through, putting things through, putting things through as a treaty, not even, so that doesn't even have to be debated in Parliament.
Oh, so it's just done now.
Yeah.
Well, we might have to talk a little bit more about the Geelong Treaty next week and what that means and where we're at with AUKUS, because I mean, we had intended to talk about it today, but half an hour just doesn't really give us much time, eh?
Oh, geez, we ought to start talking about upping the show to an hour.
I reckon.
Ring up the station and let them know what you think.
You're tuned to a Friday rave on Community Radio 3CR. We'll be at you next week, and I think next week we should probably just continue about what's going on. But as always, there's going to be a rally tonight out the front of Peter Khalil's office pretty soon. So if you haven't left already, you should do that. And we'll see you on Sunday at the Free Palestine Rally, 12 o'clock at State Library.
Well, you won't see me unless there's a rally in Moree.
Oh, well, all right. Well, you'll see me though. All right. Take
Till
care,
next week,
everyone.
then.
Till next week, stay tuned.